My name is Al Whitney. Welcome to In Defense of Humanity on the second day of February, 2019. This program is about helping people reawaken to the wonderful qualities of our own species while accepting and understanding that the current corporate commercial legal structure, both government and businesses built upon, is actively seeking to take control of all resources on our planet, including human resources. Restoring our unalienable rights and preserving our planet will require that we, the people, understand what has happened and learn how to empower ourselves as living men and women. Much of the information discussed on this show can be found either on my primary website, anticorruptionsociety.com, or my secondary site, ParentsAgainstMandatoryVaccines.net. There is also an IDH program links page on anticorruptionsociety.com where you can locate links to many of the topics we discuss on the show. I'd like to make new listeners aware that there is a free People's Empowerment Guide to our corporate commercial legal system on my website called Lawfully Yours. It is a collaboration of many men and women in the legal accountability movement. You can locate it by clicking on the Lawfully Yours tab. This guide contains valuable tools for challenging the non-existent authority of our corporate government, as does the notice of condition precedent information also on my website. If you haven't yet processed your own notice, please check it out. Well, tonight, I'd like to go back to some information that E. Michael Jones has been providing people. I've listened to hours of his work. I'm still quite impressed. I did get a message that he was on Mark Anderson's show on Friday, and I didn't get the message until today, so I did not hear it. If I have a chance, I may go back to listen. But I ran across this week, actually, it was a listener who sent me an email. I didn't know about this documentary called Goy Guide to World History. And it was featuring E. Michael Jones and his work. It was fascinating. There's like seven parts. Absolutely fascinating. I'm listening to it. Probably I'm working on the second time around, or maybe even the third for some of it, because it's got a lot of information. Folks, we have been just given a song and a dance, and they're calling it history, and it isn't even close. I mean, it isn't even close. I tried to explain to my husband tonight that I think it was John Taylor Gatto, who was a well-renowned educator. I hope he's still alive. You can listen to some of his work by typing in your YouTube box. John Taylor Gatto. But I think he was the one who mentioned that the robber barons bought out the textbooks companies, publishing companies, like in the early 1900s, I believe. And through that, by owning the textbook publishing companies, they could control what went in the textbooks. They also established the American Historical Society. They established it, and they hired men who would do what they said. So right from the get-go in the early 1900s, probably maybe even before World War I, they were changing history. Okay? So that's why when I had a clip from Christopher Bolin last week, he mentioned the fact that we aren't taught anything about Zionist history. That is a fact. And we weren't taught about the history that E. Michael Jones is exposing either. I doubt you're going to find this in any university or high school on their world history books that they give the students. You're not going to find the information that E. Michael Jones uncovered. So I wanted to share with people the first part of that series, which is about 20 minutes long. And I will put a link to this YouTube in the IDH program links page. But this is like the introduction to the series. And who you're going to hear speaking is E. Michael Jones. And unfortunately, they've got references to the Talmud, but they scroll down in text. So you'll hear music and you won't know what's going on. So really, to get the text that they pulled out to quote for this documentary, you're really going to have to click on it and watch it. And it's well worth your time, in my opinion. So let's listen to Goy Guide to World History, Part 1, and it was made by Snowshoe Films, featuring E. Michael Jones. Can we play that now?
Economy is the classic example where, because of usury, the wealth has been concentrated in so few hands that these people can now buy the politicians and have created a political system that is totally unresponsive to the needs of the overwhelming majority of the American people. And that is causing a reaction. Now, the reaction has to become conscious of what the causes are and come up with a program. That hasn't happened yet. And the main roadblock in discourse is this taboo about talking about Jews. You can't address the issue. If you're conservative, you're upset about pornography and abortion and gay marriage. And if you're a liberal, you're upset about the wars in the Middle East, and you're upset about the banking system and the looting of the manufacturing base of the United States. Well, there's one group of people that has all these things in common. And if we can't address that group of people, that group's pernicious influence on our culture, we're never going to get anywhere. There has been precedent. The Catholic Church has had a long track record of dealing with a Jewish minority in a Christian culture. And the name of that precedent is called Secret Judaeus Non. And basically, no one has the right to harm the Jew. But on the other hand, the Jew does not have the right to corrupt your culture. That's a modus vivendi, I think, that needs to be brought back, and we need to have that discussion again. And we need to break through these taboos, because so far we haven't succeeded in making a dent in anything. They can subvert all of these institutions, and we can't even say who is doing the subverting. We can't even address the people who are doing the subverting. It's got to change. You cannot understand history, the history of the West, beginning with the time of Christ to the present day, unless you understand the role of the Jew as the protagonist of anti-logos. When St. John wrote the gospel in Greek, he had to incorporate Greek philosophy. Greek philosophy became part of the Christian patrimony by the very fact that he wrote in Greek. And so when you say the first sentence of the St. John's gospel is, "Ein arche, ein ha logos." In the beginning, there was logos. In a sense, that's the great metaphysical statement that we have to understand here. We are all creatures of logos. In a sense, logos created us. And it's up to us to find out our situation with vis-a-vis logos. Greek philosophy was integrated into Christianity by the writing of St. John's gospel. And the word then, in the bigger picture, is reason. Logos is eternal. There's no logos pre-Christ or post-Christ. It's the same logos. It is eternal. And it takes energy to reject logos. And I'm saying that's the job of Jewish leaders, is to keep these people all together rejecting logos. A contemporary example of this, the Coen brothers' film, A Serious Man, is a good example about the tyranny of the rabbi over the Jewish people. But they understand it intuitively, that the rabbi is the enemy of the Jewish people because the rabbi is the roadblock between the Jewish mind and logos. The rabbi is the representative of Talmud, which is the hate speech that keeps Jews separated from logos. In any human context, the people are going to respond to the truth, to reality, and that is logos. The Jew is in a special circumstance. Every Jew has to face this in one way or another. You have to face the fact of, who am I? Do I fit in with the group that they say I belong to? And a lot of people say no. Israel Shamir is one of them. He was in an artillery fight. He was serving in the Israeli army. He thought, wait a minute, who am I working for here? Gilad Atzmon. I could go down the line, all the way back through history. Jews wake up to logos, and either they follow logos to the extent that is possible, and I'm saying as a Christian, the fullest extent possible would become to accept baptism and accept Jesus Christ as the logos incarnate. It's the full, but there are all sorts of intermediary stages. And the crucial thing is, am I going to accept logos and follow it wherever it goes, the truth, or am I going to become part of this operation because of the material benefits that accrue from being part of this operation? That's the fundamental question, I think. You cannot understand history, the history of the West, beginning with the time of Christ to the present day, unless you understand the role of the Jew as the protagonist of anti-logos. This is exactly what Friedrich Romek said in his book, Der Sinn der Geschichte, The Meaning of History. As soon as you say that there is a meaning in history, this is what the meaning has to be. This is the only possible meaning of history. His book is an attack on positivism, which says there is no meaning in history. It says history is meaningless. And no one believes that, ultimately, I think. Everyone believes that there's a meaning to history. But the only candidate that can fulfill this is the conflict, I think, between Jesus Christ and the Jews. The true meaning of history, because it has expanded now from that small beginning to encompass everything on earth. There's, in a sense, there's not a culture on earth that has not been dragged into this conflict. Take China, for example, that had a culture that existed long before the culture of the West. They were dragged into this via Karl Marx. And now via Milton Friedman, who is the successor, you know, the new architect of the economic system in China. 30-some years after the death of Christ, the revolutionary spirit reaches its fruition, and there's an uprising in Palestine, and they rise up against the Roman conquerors, and it ends in disaster for the Jewish people. The Jewish revolutionaries hold out at Masada, at this mountain redoubt, and they commit suicide. That's not the end, though. 60 years after that, another Jewish revolutionary rises up, and this man's name is Simon Bar Kokhba. He is successful in driving the Romans from Palestine for a certain period of time, and then gradually the Romans cut them off from the sea, and they take over one city at a time, and they basically start to starve them to death so that they're now holed up in Jerusalem. At this point, a rabbi, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, recognizes that the Romans are going to win, so he gets himself smuggled out in a shroud. He goes to the Roman general and says, "I'm a friend of Rome. Please grant me one wish. I want to start a school." This is the man who starts Judaism. This is modern Judaism, because what happened in 70 was that the temple was destroyed. You cannot have Judaism without a temple, without a priesthood, and without sacrifice. That all was destroyed then, and so you have to reconstitute Judaism, and so it's this new entity that is younger than Christianity. It's not older than Christianity, and that is what gets started, and at that point, the Jewish people are dispersed throughout the Roman Empire and eventually take up their abode in two main places, which are the enemies of Rome, the successor of the Roman Empire, the enemies of Christendom, which would be Turkey in the east and Spain in the west, and then take up positions of power, generally at this point, in anti-Christian countries like Turkey and Moorish Spain. Rome was a culture based on usury. It was capitalism before there was capitalism. And capitalism is state-sponsored usury. So usury was in force in the Roman Empire, and the Jews did not bring it there. The Jews got involved in usury primarily during the Middle Ages as a crucial factor in history. It was the Middle Ages because Christians were forbidden to take usury on loans. And so what you have is a long, complicated process during which the Christians used the Jews. Florence under Cosimo de' Medici. Florence was a proto-capitalist culture where the oligarchs appropriated surplus value from the laborers, which meant that the laborers were not getting paid a decent wage. So what did Cosimo do? He brought the Jews into Florence to lend the worker the money that their employers were not paying them. Something similar to what happened in the United States in the 1970s, when the wages started to go down, the credit card appeared, to give the worker the illusion that he had money, which he did not have. So it was that kind of bondage. And the Jew, at this point, learned predatory Jewish financial behavior, which is usury.
With usura hath no man a house of good stone.
1239, when St. Raymond of Peñaforte introduced Nicholas Donan to Pope Gregory IX. Gregory IX was stunned. He had never heard, the church had never known that there was a Talmud. But the written Talmud had been in existence for 600 years, church didn't know about it. And so he said, this is awful that they would have these type of blasphemies in this book, that the Blessed Mother was a whore, that the father of Jesus Christ was a Roman soldier, that Jesus Christ is now buried up to his ears in excrement, burning excrement in hell. This is cannot be tolerated in a Christian society.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product, and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
The written Talmud had been in existence for 600 years. Church didn't know about it. And so he said, this is awful that they would have these type of blasphemies in this book. This cannot be tolerated in a Christian society. So he turned to Raymond of Peñaforte and he said, I want you to put this book on trial. And if it's found guilty, burn it. And I want you to dedicate your order to the conversion of the Jews and the Moors. And what that led then to Thomas Aquinas' Summa Contra Gentiles, Raimondo Martini's Pugeo Fidei Adversus Judeos et Mauros. It was the most successful conversion campaign in the history of the church, I'd have to say, or certainly one of them. They had either converted or they had left and gone to Poland. In a sense, you could say, well, they were forced. There was an element of coercion there. And that's one of the most tragic histories, tragic chapters in the history that I wrote, because what you saw from a theological point of view, the minute the Catholic Church understood that there was such a thing as a Talmud, they worked for the conversion of the Jews because they understood this is a totally wicked ideology. It is an anti-Christian ideology. To understand the crux of the matter, you have to go back to Alexander VI. Which many people consider the worst pope of the history of the papacy. He was a Spaniard. The Renaissance papacy was decadent. It was carnal. It was involved in the accumulation of wealth. And the reform in the church came through the mendicant orders, the Dominicans and the Franciscans. And the great Dominican preacher at this time was Savonarola, who showed up in Florence and denounced sodomy and usury, just as Dante had denounced sodomy and usury in Florence 200 years before that. The papacy had to respond, and the papacy, because Savonarola hated the papacy, and because he was hoping that the King of France would come in and depose the Pope, Alexander VI turned on Savonarola and basically connived in his death. He was murdered by the citizens of Florence. I think that was the crucial turning point. The church, the papacy, should have joined in with this reform. They should have stopped usury dead in its tracks at this point. Because they did not, the next time the church did not stop being corrupt. And the next time the protest came, it was Luther. And this time, it was not going to be an intra-jurist battle, because the aristocracy saw its chance to steal church property and confer on Luther the status of state church in exchange. And that, once that happened, the church's police power was broken, and that began the rise of capitalism, what we call capitalism now, which is basically state-sponsored usury.
With usura, sin against nature, is thy bread evermore of stale rags.
There was this, still this corruption in the papacy. There was, there's no question about it. You also had the rise of German nationalism at this time. There were people who felt that gold, remember, gold is money. That's the only source of wealth. Gold is pouring out of Germany into Rome. And they're depleting. You also had a group of people, the minor aristocracy. Ulrich von Hutten was one of the leaders of the Reformation. It's the minor aristocracy that's being frozen out of the picture by people like the Fugger family, the bankers. The aristocracy is bound up with land. And you've got all these guys who are paying you in bushels of grain, and you need money. And you're frozen out of the money operation, and the leadership is being taken over by these banking families in Augsburg, like the Fuggers. And so you've been disenfranchised. And that becomes a disenfranchised aristocracy is the best, probably the best revolutionary cadre you can have. And that's precisely what Ulrich von Hutten was. So you add that to Luther's situation, which is exactly the situation with the Hussites, of monks who were carnal. Zhilevsky in Defenestration of Prague, a monk like Luther, a monk like Thomas Münzer, these were people who hated the evangelical councils. They didn't want to live that way anymore. They were sick of celibacy, sick of fasting, all this type of stuff. The classical world knew about usury, and all of the leaders, the intellectual leaders of the classical world, whether the Hebrew writers or the Greeks, knew that it was toxic and you had to prohibit it.
The most hated, and with the greatest reason, is usury, which makes a gain out of money itself and not from the natural object of it. For money was intended to be used in exchange, but not to increase at interest. And this term, interest, which means the birth of money from money, is applied to the breeding of money, because the offspring resembles the parent. Wherefore, of all modes of getting wealth, this is the most unnatural. Aristotle, 350 BC.
But the empires all practiced usury, and the Roman Empire was the classic instance of a usurious empire. A usury then concentrated wealth into fewer and fewer hands. It reduced workers to slaves.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org. Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The First Amendment in the Bill of Rights limits the government's power by ensuring the freedom of speech and preserving the rights of the people. Every day that passes, our rights gradually slip away. It's time to take a stand and let the government know we're tired of losing our rights. LibertyStickers.com will allow you to express your rights and allow millions of people to see you stand up for what you believe in. LibertyStickers.com carries the largest selection of bumper stickers online, ranging from political to humorous, and is your number one source for Ron Paul for President stickers. As always, you can find your favorite stickers that protest the war and the president. Don't see what you're looking for? Liberty Stickers will custom make stickers that will let you get your message across for all Americans to see. Go to libertystickers.com and see pre-made stickers that will get everyone talking. That's libertystickers.com or call 877-873-9626. Liberty Stickers, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Of money, because the offspring resembles the parent. Wherefore, of all modes of getting wealth, this is the most unnatural. Aristotle, 350 BC.
The empires all practiced usury, and the Roman Empire was the classic instance of a usurious empire. A usury then concentrated wealth into fewer and fewer hands. It reduced workers to slaves that would work on huge agricultural operations called latifundia, and it indirectly brought about the collapse of the Roman Empire. Christianity arose to fill the gap left by the collapse of the Roman Empire, and oftentimes they simply took over the whatever was left of the mechanism of the Roman Empire. And so diocese is a word that's a Roman designation of an administrative unit. And it's obviously a Catholic designation of a unit. But the difference was that Christianity understood the value of labor in a way that no usury empire can. because there are fundamentally two choices. Either you think that money can copulate, then that's all you need, because you can just put two coins together and they will copulate and you'll end up with three coins. If you don't believe that, then you have to accept the premise that labor is the source of value. And this is precisely what the church did. The people who saved civilization were the Benedictines, largely, the Benedictine monasteries, and their motto was ora et labora. And for the first time in human history, you had a culture that honored labor. And so for 1,000 years, you had a labor-based economy where the monastery would store up the values that were acquired by labor and concentrate them and put them to social use. This was unprecedented. It's in a sense, a unique period of history, because it was the period of history where the Catholic Church had hegemony over the culture, total hegemony. This was also a period during which economic exchange almost went out, almost ceased. And in some areas, there was basically not a monetary economy. So in places like Venice, it still was a monetary economy, never stopped being that. But in the interior of places like the Holy Roman Empire, you had an economy where you owed your lord labor, or the produce of your labor.
I'm sorry, I was muted. Sorry. I'm talking away. Okay. The more I thought about it, the Catholic Church and usury and how they put their resources to the benefit of the people, I realized that we had all these Catholic hospitals, and still do, right here in Columbus. St. Anne's, we have Mount Carmel. I worked at hospitals in Indiana and Illinois that were owned by churches. And up until 73, I believe, when Tricky Dicky was talked into allowing a home maintenance, health maintenance organization, he passed a Health Maintenance Organization Act, which all of a sudden allowed the healthcare industry to make profit. Prior to there, the industry could only make costs, they could not make profit. Changed everything. All of a sudden, you've got what we've got today, which is a bleeping nightmare. Everyone involved in healthcare is in it for the profit. Big pharma, these big medical centers, device companies. You've got doctors now who are forming these groups that are corporations. So the whole thing has changed. Of course, it makes it far more dangerous for patients, because getting well is not profitable for them. Okay? What's profitable for them is for you to remain ill and come back again and again and again. So somehow the Catholics, I don't know how this happened, lost control of these hospitals. And I'm going to have to contact Dr. Jones, unless somebody knows what happened and how that happened, to find out how the Catholics lost control of all of these hospitals, how the churches lost control. Did they sell out, or what happened? But the other thing we see with usury, not only is it in medicine. Years ago, my mom worked at a hospital, and if someone left the hospital and they left a balance, they were allowed to make payments without interest. They were allowed to make payments on that bill until it was paid off. You can't do that anymore. Not only can you not do that with hospital bills, they want you to take out in financing, okay? When I took a dog to OSU Veterinary School, to get the dog seen, I had to sign a bunch of paperwork. One of the documents they wanted me to sign was that I agreed that if I couldn't pay the balance, I would pay them 18% interest. Now, there's usury, right? There it is. I would pay them 18% interest on the unpaid balance. A veterinary school seeing people and their pets in their clinic caught on to that scam. The other thing, the other ones who've caught on to that scam is a dentist that my friend goes to. He does very expensive prosthodontics and decided he doesn't want to wait on his money. So in his waiting room is a little pamphlet of how you can get this financed, your dental work financed. That way he gets his money right away. When I read it, she brought it back and showed it to me. By the time you finance, depending on, they want you to finance over 5 years. The interest that you'd be paying is outrageous to this company. This company is making interest, making money off of money. So this usury concept has gone into every part of our commercial world. So somebody from a vet school to a dentist to a doctor's office, they're all now trying to make interest, to make money from the debt. And to me, it's just outrageous. Okay, I want to read you some excerpts so that we have no confusion that there is a war being waged against the American people. If you haven't read Silent Weapons of Quiet Wars, you need to do so. I don't know if Michael Jones has read that or not, but it is all it does is support what he is saying. This document represents a doctrine that was adopted by the Policy Committee of the Bilderberg Group during its first known meeting in 1954. The first, I think, this document was published was by Bill Cooper in his book, Behold a Pale Horse. Okay? So, in the document, in the section called Energy, this is what it says. This is an evil document that absolutely must have Talmudic origins. All science is merely a means to an end. The means is knowledge, the end is control. Beyond this remains only one issue. Who will be the beneficiary? In 1954, this was the issue of primary concern. Although the so-called moral issues were raised, in view of the law of natural selection, that's Darwin, it was agreed that a nation or world of people who will not use their intelligence are no better than animals who do not have intelligence. Such people are beasts of burden and stakes on the table by choice and consent. Talmudic. Consequently, in the interest of future world order, peace and tranquility, it was decided to privately wage war, a quiet war, against the American public, with an ultimate objective of permanently shifting the natural and social energy, that would be the wealth, of the undisciplined and irresponsible many into the hands of the self-disciplined, responsible, and worthy few. In order to implement this objective, it was necessary to create, secure, and apply new weapons, which, as it turned out, were a class of weapons so subtle and sophisticated in their principle of operation and public appearance as to earn for themselves the name, quote, silent weapons, unquote. In conclusion, the objective of economic research, as conducted by the magnates of capital, banking, and the industries of commodities and services, is the establishment of an economy which is totally predictable and manipulatable. Then it goes on in the description introduction of the silent weapon, which is the bold title of the next section. Quote, everything that is expected from an ordinary weapon is expected from a silent weapon by its creators, but only in its manner of functioning. It shoots situations instead of bullets, propelled by data processing, instead of chemical reaction, originating from bits of data instead of grains of gunpowder, from a computer instead of a gun, operated by a computer programmer instead of a marksman, under the orders of a banking magnate instead of a military general. It makes no obvious explosive noises, causes no obvious physical or mental injury, and does not obviously interfere with anyone's daily social life. Yet, it makes an unmistakable noise, causes unmistakable physical and mental damage, and unmistakably interferes with the daily social life, i.e., unmistakable to a trained observer, one who knows what to look for. The public can't comprehend this weapon, and therefore cannot believe they are being attacked and subdued by a weapon. The public might instinctively feel that something's wrong, but that is because of the technical nature of the silent weapon. They cannot express their feeling in a rational way or handle the problem with intelligence. Therefore, they do not know how to cry for help and do not know how to associate with others to defend themselves against it. When a silent weapon is applied gradually, the public adjusts, adapts to its presence, and learns to tolerate its encroachment on their life until the pressure, psychological via economic, becomes too great and they crack up. Okay, the next I want to do is play for you an audio clip from an amazing BBS, British Broadcasting System, program that appeared on BBC at, what is the date? October 18th, 2018. They ran this show on BBC News, October 18th, 2018, and the name of the program, and I'll put a link in so you can watch the entire YouTube, but the name of the program is What's Killing America's White Men? So could we play that now?
Have a male with a self-inflicted gunshot wound, caused by the negative signs of life.
A male possibly committed suicide still has the pistol in his hand.
Every year, nearly 45,000 people in America die by suicide. That's over double the number of homicides. In the last 20 years, suicide rates in most Western countries have fallen, but in the US, they've gone up by nearly a third. And there's one particular group of Americans causing the spike in numbers: white, middle-aged men.
I was going to kill myself. I just said, dude, you're just a flunky in the machine and it's time to get the hell out.
The largely white state of Montana has the highest suicide rate in America, at double the national average.
Get busy!
I want to try and understand just why so many middle-aged white men are taking their own lives, and what the impact of that is here.
There was another gun there, and I thought, can I catch up? How fast does a soul travel? Can I please catch up and be with him?
In the last 20 years, suicide rates for white middle-aged men have skyrocketed, whilst those for Black and Asian Americans haven't changed much. Just south of the camp is the largely white county of Missoula, where there has been a 50% increase in suicides in the last 5 years.
We are moving on to our tumbling.
I came to Missoula's biggest event, the county fair, to try to understand the pressures that men are facing here.
First number is B4. B4.
Do you think it's getting harder for men?
It's getting harder to make the money, to provide for your family.
What does it mean as a man if you're not able to provide for that family?
It just feels like I failed. I failed my wife, I failed my kid.
Give these guys a big round of applause.
Guys talk to each other about their problems?
No.
No?
In general, no.
No? Okay.
At least none of the guys that I know.
dogs.
I love animals.
I met up with Mayor John Engen, who was born and raised in the county.
Today, Missoula, Montana is much different from it was when I was born in 1964. We manufactured and depended on the timber industry. That industry was largely a man's world. It's truck driving, it's logging, it's equipment operation. If you're a person of my generation, much of your identity is wrapped up in what you do. What's the first thing you ask a stranger in a social situation? What do you do?
What do you do? Yeah.
So for a very long time, the answer might have been, I'm a logger, which meant you put in a solid day of work for a reasonable wage.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you provided for your family, you created a product. When I ask people what they do in Missoula, the answers are far more complex than they used to be. I'm between jobs. I don't do anything.
It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
February is Heart Month. Every year for the month of February, to show our appreciation to Extendivite's faithful customers, we have a sale. If you would like to try Extendivite, now is the time to get a few months ahead and really give Extendivite the time to show you how it works. Most of Extendivite's long-term customers wait for this sale to stock up. People and doctors tell us about the unbelievable improvements that they have experienced in their overall health, not just the heart. Extendivite wants you to experience the power of these herbs. Get a four-month supply for only $115 for either the capsules or tincture. Please take advantage of this once-per-year sale and get healthy for life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Age.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you provided for your family, you've created a product. When I ask people what they do in Missoula, the answers are far more complex than they used to be. I'm between jobs. I don't do anything right now. But this is what I was. This is what I was, right? And in a world where you grow up with that label, and that label is important, and suddenly somebody tears the tag off, who are you?
But this isn't just a Rust Belt town in decline. Missoula's economy is thriving. But the old jobs are disappearing, and many white working class men are feeling left behind.
The folks you see here today, a lot of them are going to be from places where what was the traditional Western lifestyle is still very much alive to them. That sense of self-sufficiency, and that you ought not rely on really anybody but yourself. And as boys were taught from a very young age, man up, toughen up, you don't cry. Well, when problems compile to a point that you can't shake it off, and there's no way in hell that you're going to have a conversation with another adult human being about how miserable you are, your options start to narrow considerably.
The Missoula police are on the front line of this crisis, and the number of mental health and suicidal call-outs has doubled in 3 years. Christian Cameron is a patrol officer with the force. Within seconds of being in the patrol car, a suicide-related call comes through.
From this request for a welfare check, caller lives with a male at this address. Has a history of depression and has written suicidal notes in the past. No recent threats.
Hi, Cobby. Thank you. It draws a lot of our resources. We're responding to this right now, two officers. You know, there could be crimes going on that we're not able to respond to because we're handling these types of calls. Okay, so we're pulling into the complex now. 396, 341 units are 97 in the area. How's it going, bud? You don't need any assistance or anything from us. No thoughts about harming yourself or anything like that. If you need anything from us, anytime, 911, okay?
Is he okay?
He is. Yeah, we made contact with him.
Okay.
He works a graveyard shift, so he was just sleeping.
Okay. So this is the third suicide-related call today for the force?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. One was a person that was at a residence kind of in their front yard holding a handgun to their head.
Oh, my gosh. In their front yard?
Yeah. So another individual went into one of the local sporting goods stores and was attempting to take a firearm in order to try to harm himself.
And that's the thing that gets mentioned again and again. Guns. They are the most common method of suicide for American men, and there are a lot of them in Montana. The men here are killing themselves with firearms at a rate far higher than the national average. In Missoula, people in suicidal crisis are brought to St. Patrick's Hospital, which is coming under increasing pressure.
Hey, it's Brooks.
Brooks Bear is a mental health professional here.
You're such a busy man.
You know, that's just the way this job goes, is it's just a lot of chaos.
So you work a straight through 48-hour shift?
Yeah, I'm covering the emergency department for a 48-hour stretch.
And how many people would you see in your shift?
20 is probably average. So if I see 20 people in 48 hours, 12, 13, you know, 14-ish are going to be suicidal.
And what are you seeing? Is it getting worse?
Oh, it's getting, I think, much worse. Just in the time I've been working in this hospital, I think our numbers are coming up 20 or 30% per year.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, noticeable.
Oh my gosh.
But despite the growing need, this year Montana has seen huge cuts to its mental health budget.
I think the mental health cuts are having a pretty big impact. If there were stronger outpatient services, a lot, probably 30% of what I'm seeing lately, I wouldn't see because they have nowhere else to turn.
Yeah. This place is going to get busy.
It's going to go wild for hours. I won't be too long.
Across America, many men turn to substances to try to cope with their distress. In Montana, those who go on to end their life are twice as likely as other Americans to have alcohol in their system. A few hours later, I caught up with Brooks to talk more about this.
We do love alcohol here. You throw alcohol at any suicidal individual and you've exponentially increased the risk. Literally, loneliness and alcohol. Honestly, I just talk to so many men who just talk about this crushing loneliness. You know, loneliness literally hurts. The brain reads loneliness like physical pain.